Welcome, everybody, to episode 317 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp.
Hello.
Oh, God, John, welcome back to another episode of
Thanks.
Lawn Equipment Tool Suck Weekly.
And you got the date right, so we're off to a good start this week.
Indeed, indeed. So I want to apologize. Hold on. I want to apologize. To our listeners out there, you knew it was coming. I mean, you knew it as soon as I said it. You even said on Twitter, I could hear the apology already. So here it is. apparently, ever since I got this new machine that runs Windows 10, the audio has been terrible on this Hangout and via the podcast. I even got to hear it for myself last week when editing the show. And the volume goes from really high to really low to really high. And it's terrible to listen to. So we're doing a little bit of testing here before the show today, and I was using my Samson mic, and it looked like it was fixed. Then the issue popped back up, so today I'm using the boom mic, and so far so good, and I hope we can get through the show with better audio quality, but it's got to be something in Windows 10. Windows 10 has all kinds of little doodads and features and things it does without you knowing. You know, I think Windows 10 needs to be GDPR compliant. With audio or something, you know, I don't know.
I like that you're using GDPR compliance now as a verb, as like a threat verb.
Maybe that's wrong to do. Maybe that's, I don't know. But I mean, there's GDPR hysteria going on right now. So
I'm a bigger fan of the GRTC, which is my global right to cherish our time together forever, regardless of how anonymized your information is on all of my servers. I think that's we should celebrate that.
So I'm going to apologize to listeners out there. Hopefully it's better. And
I guess it's probably an audio cable. I bet you it's not Windows 10. I bet you've got a bad. It's like all these mics. Like I've got, you know, whatever mic I've got. I forget which one I had. But it's the Rode Podcaster.
Yeah, it looks like a Rode Podcaster.
But it's still like it's like an old FireWire connection. Like. Port on the back. It's like 20-year-old cable tech. These cables are not meant to last the way that as long as we're using them for. So I bet you it's just a bad cable. Replace the cable.
That's so the audio on the show has been cringeworthy. Hopefully we've addressed that. And in other news, I've got poison ivy on my face. So if anybody's watching the video.
Yep. I want to hear this.
So after ranting about power equipment that you use to make the lawn look nice, I got poison ivy on the face, and this is the fourth time. Wow. Well, I mean, when you're weed whacking weeds, just everything goes in your face and everything's flying around. When you just want to cut stuff down, you just shove the weed whacker blade into the pile and put it on full blast.
Oh, don't! Well, now this truth comes out. You know? Don't do that. Why don't do that?
Well, I know where the poison ivy was, but I don't know. I thought I got away with it this time, but I had pants on. You know, I wear the safety glasses, the ear protection, but stuff's flying around everywhere. And thankfully, it's nowhere near as bad. You know, the first time I got poison ivy, I still have pictures of it. I thought my skin was going to fall off. It looked terrible, and I had to go get shots. And then I've had poison ivy two or three other times where I've had to get the Benadryl shot. And this time it's not so bad. A little itchy, a little scratchy, you know, kind of like the characters from The Simpsons on both. But I'm getting through it. It'll be okay. And by the way,
I can't see it on the video right now. You look as, much like you good. Just look like good. You, which is take it or leave it. You look as good as you would overlook. At least your hair is short.
And by the way, an update on my power equipment. I found out that my chainsaw, Toast Craftsman chainsaw, I had to scrap it. They said it was a square piston, can't generate any compression, so that's gone. Yeah. And then my Toro air blower, the carburetor was worn. What does that mean? I used it too much. You're not allowed. You only have a certain amount of uses for, you know, an air blower before you have to replace the carburetor. So I had to get that replaced. And so there you go. There's an update on my lawn care life.
That's exciting. That's what people tune in for, I think.
Right.
But you're getting all of our rain too. Still, like we've still had a ton of rain here.
Oh yeah, it was
sunny. But
yesterday was a monsoon. It was like it was incredible. But we have a couple of nice days ahead of us. Hopefully, it dries out and I can get back out there and get some more poison ivy.
Hopefully not, Jeff.
Really, Jeff. So let's see. Anything else? I thought we had something else. I was thinking, you know, speaking of GDPR, I was thinking the other day about how I wanted you to opt in to our friendship. I wanted your consent. I need your consent to be on the show. And I need you to opt in. You know, if you want to be my friend, you've got to check the box.
I will. Did you see the there was a tweet from someone that made the rounds where they bought a car and like the printout of their contract had the like CAPTCHA check, like I'm not a robot. She's like, I had to, the financing company made me check the box in person that said I wasn't a robot. Oh God, this is where we are now in life, is all those things. So I will. I don't have a choice, Jeff. If I want to be your friend, I got to check the box. So
check the box.
I'm checking the box. I'm checking your box, Jeff.
I was also thinking about, you know, how all this GDPR stuff, opting in, checking the box. Somebody who's pretty creative at this stuff could create a cool rap with all this stuff. There's a rap in here somewhere. Well, yeah, you know. You
being the...
opt in or opt out. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's a beat in there somewhere.
I think that's your homework for next week is to write the check the box rap. That may be the most ridiculous thing that we've talked about yet.
Yes. All right. So we do have some things to talk about today. Of course, the first thing is not exactly WordPress news. It's somewhat related, but news came out that Adobe will acquire Magento for $1.68 billion.
Crazy. We just talked about this. Did we just talk about this? These like mashups, these pairings.
Square acquiring Weebly. Yeah. Last big announcement.
We talked about this. Like not this exact pairing, but what other possible partnerships are there? Like what e-commerce software is it that's going to end up with some other mogul mega company? And not that Adobe's like an enormous company, but you know, this is it. This is exactly what we talked about.
So Magento's been around
for a long time.
Yeah, it's been around since 2008. Mm-hmm. It was an open source. It's basically just a platform solely based around e-commerce. In fact, it was acquired by eBay back in 2011, if you remember that, for a deal of around $180 million. And this information comes from an article published on TechCrunch. Mm-hmm. And the company went private again thanks to investors in 2015, which paid around $200 million. And now the company sold for almost $1.7 billion. That's quite the turnaround and payoff to that investment to Hill House, who initially gave him that money to turn back into a private company. But on the face of all this, so now you have Adobe with an e-commerce platform. Automattic has an e-commerce platform. What else is out there? A couple other companies are looking at e-commerce. I mean, that's the huge space. But Tony Perez had this this interesting tweet, and he says that fascinating the valuation disparity between the three acquisitions. Automattic, undisclosed, estimated at $30 to $50 million for WooCommerce. Square, disclosed $365 million. And then Adobe disclosed $1.68 billion. And he says, what do you think drove that delta, and did Woo exit too early?
It's an interesting thought. possibly. You think of who the competitors are and what the space is, how many sites that there are running on all each of the respective platforms. It is possible that WooCommerce's sales potential is pretty boundless. So could be. $1.6 billion for Magento is impressive, though. I would like to know more about the wheels and deals that happen when you see something like this, because the jump from eBay to now, I mean, yeah, there's a lot that changes and happens in 7 years, but is it $1 billion different? Like, I don't know. So I would like to hear the rest of the story someday.
And Dries Bartart, one of the founders of Drupal, he published his thoughts on the acquisition. And he says, you know, near the bottom, he says, for open source, it could be good, could be bad. Mm-hmm. He says, if you look at what Adobe did with Day Software back in 2010, that technology was largely made using open source frameworks and was positioned as an open best-of-breed solution, but that sort of has gone by the wayside. It's been buried sort of mass by Adobe. Now, Magento is open source. I believe it's on they had a new version that came out, and they moved everything to GitHub to provide more opportunities for collaboration. And that'll be one aspect of the acquisition to see how that plays out. If Adobe really champions Magento being open source and being open source first versus open source kind of falling by the wayside, and then Adobe just transitions Magento into all of its core offerings already.
Well, Adobe is not unlike other bigger established corporations where their relationship with open source software is not as transparent or open or straightforward as people would hope for it to be. So it's OSL 3, I think, now. They have it's a different world of software and licensing that they're in. So no GPL, I don't think, to be found on the Magento side of it. But
and one of the other things Dree says, that the acquisition was a huge win for PHP, because he says that Adobe now owns a 1.68 billion PHP product, which helps validate PHP as an enterprise-grade technology.
And I agree with that 100%. And the more, there should be more of these kinds of bigger acquisitions and software and creations and things. And it's weird because I haven't looked at Magento in so long. I think the last time I looked at Magento was when I was helping Justin and Dan a little bit with some WP e-commerce stuff back around this exact same time, 2008, 2009, 2010, give or take. Was just looking at what is going on in the open source PHP shopping cart space. I probably haven't looked at it since, so maybe might be time to give it a look.
And somewhere out there still kicking is WP e-commerce.
WP is still out there, Ronnie Picken.
Just wanted to throw that out there. And last but not least, regarding this announcement, Dries also suggested that if you were going to acquire an e-commerce platform, he suggested acquiring a headless one. He says, in a headless approach, the front end and the back end are decoupled, which means the experience or presentation layer is separated from the commerce business layer, and there's a lot less overlap of functionality in this approach, which should provide a better experience for merchants and developers.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that's what everybody says and thinks, but I don't know.
I don't know you. Who are you? Who are you, John? But so there you have a huge acquisition there by Adobe with Magento. Let's talk a little bit about WordPress 4.9.6, which could have been a minor release, could have been a major release. Up at this point, no one knows what kind of release it was, except it was just released. There's a little bit of fallout that happened with 4.9.6, which was, some of it was a little bit expected. However, this little bit of fallout was interesting in that instead of it was a combination of circumstances, unfortunate circumstances, that led to some of these issues. One of the things is that there was some documentation on how to use a particular feature, and the example that was in the documentation was wrong or was incorrect, and some plugin authors used that example and ended up creating fatal errors on people's on users' websites. Now, I believe there was up to 8 plugins that were discovered to be using this bad example. Mika Epstein personally contacted each plugin author over this past weekend, got things rectified. And this is one of the reasons why, and this was unbeknownst to me, because in the WordPress 4.9.6 release post, the official one, it says that sites that supported automatic updates were already in the process of being updated. So when I logged into a site I maintain on the side over the weekend, I was wondering why hasn't this site been updated to 4.9.6. It's a minor release. Minor releases are supposed to be updated automatically. And it turns out that the automatic update system for 4.9.6 was disabled so that the team could monitor the effects of the upgrades for, I don't know, a million or so websites. And because that this error was being generated, wanted to limit it as soon as possible. Now, based on discussions I've read, 4.9.6 will remain, auto updates for that version will remain remain disabled, and there's plans to introduce a 4.9.7 here in the next week or two, give or take, probably after the holidays, that will include a fix for this, maybe a couple other bug fixes, and that will actually have auto updates enabled, so that if you are on 4.9.5, and if you don't go to the next version manually, you should automatically upgrade to 4.9.7 and get all the GDPR stuff and what have you. But this, I saw you chime in here into the core chat on this version, and you know, to me, I think it kind of goes back a little bit to the debate of whether, you know, should this be a major version, and if it is, then manual updating takes place. But this was billed as a minor release. It was pushed out, and everybody was supposed to auto-update. And a lot of people were wondering, well, why didn't the site auto-update? It's a minor release. And this led people to think that maybe their site was hacked, maybe their update system was broken, maybe their web host disabled auto-updates. And there really was no official word as to what's going on. In fact, I don't think there has been an official word yet published on the Make blog or the WordPress.org blog on what's going on here. And it just seems like a bit of a mess.
It does seem that way. It could have been worse. So there's always that. But yeah, it is a unique set of circumstances. I thought you were going to say that you were still running for 9.3 where the auto updater was broken.
No, I forgot about that.
There are still some sites that are out there that are stuck on 4.9.3. Hosts and people are trying to get them to manually log in and, you know, click the link. A lot of them are probably just sites that were temporary sites or sites set up in the world or sandboxes or something. But there's quite a few 4.9.3 sites that are out there still too. So all in all, the 4.9.6 fallout from the GDPR stuff ain't so bad. I mean, we knew it wasn't going to be. The fatal errors were not surprising, but that's because it is not unusual for everyone that builds plugins and themes to a certain degree to want to take all the special stuff that lives inside of WP Admin and put it theme side. That's how WooCommerce works. BuddyPress, BBPress, all this stuff ends up theme side. So it's based on code that lives in WP Admin, and so it's not surprising that you call one function over here and it needs something else over there, and it's not around. So it's not unique. This happens all the time, and so that this happening this way isn't a 4.9.6 issue. This is like a documentation, maybe. I don't even think the docs were wrong. I think they just were not clear enough, which is why the edit went in. It said what to do. It's just people were using the wrong hook. And my rant for this, and you know, I catch grief for how I sometimes overprotect some of the things that I do with my plugins that I write, but you never know when something like this is going to change anyways. And so anytime that you're building a feature that relies on some function in WordPress that isn't always loaded all the time, you have to check and make sure that it's there. If you're using a class and the class isn't there, you have to do the right thing and check and see if it's there. Like you write more code, you have to think a little bit more abstractly. But it's not that hard to just go, does this function exist? If not, go look for it. It gets a little old having to do it all the time, but that is how all of these WordPress plugins in the environment works. It's not unusual to need to do that. And that's what I do all the time when we're building plugins or add-ons or the BBs or anything else, is just making sure that we're protecting users from broken sites. And sometimes you have to, you know, do a little bit of weird work to do that. So not that big of a deal, I don't think.
And with all the talk around the auto updates and disable and enable, now it looks like through some discussion and a bit of a push to perhaps turn auto updates on for every release of WordPress, starting with WordPress 5.0. And I know that Andrew Nason chimed in on Twitter and says that we're not being able to auto update WordPress to major releases, major versions. I like combined releases and versions into the same word. It's pretty cool. But that it's a bug and not a feature. And WordPress 3.7, which introduced auto update functionality for minor releases, was released 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's time, maybe even WordPress 5.0 being an excellent candidate to start doing this, to have every version of WordPress, minor or major release, now it doesn't matter, version numbers won't matter, to be auto updated?
So here is my two cents on the issue. I agree with Andy that auto updates should happen for majors and minors and every release. It should be a thing that we don't think about, because that's what computers are for. We build them to do the work that we don't want to do ourselves. And sometimes that involves the software keeping itself up to date. I've kvetched before about how my iPhone never auto updates apps. Every time I open an app store, I've got 17 app updates. They never ever auto update. I'm one of the lucky ones. It never ever works. Not even pretend. Not even like I'm missing it. It just never happens. And that's really annoying. It should do it. It's supposed to do that thing, and it doesn't. And the only thing that makes it weird for WordPress is and this GDPR example is a good one, is that because it is an open source piece of software, and because we have hundreds of contributors on any given release now, that we do have to respect the responsibility that we have, that sites are just going to start being alive without us anymore. And that means coding in a way that is sort of clean room coding. It is pristine in a way where nothing can ever break for a user, and everything is kind of handled appropriately so that breakage is avoided. It can roll itself back if something goes wrong, because we're not just talking about like me not being able to play the latest version of an iOS game. We're talking about like people's WooCommerce or Easy Digital Download or GiveWP stores, like important websites that are critical to the success of corporations and nonprofits and everything. If something happens overnight or randomly in the middle of the day, because a major release comes out and one of any 70,000 plugins or even more themes is broken a little bit, then it breaks the site completely. So it's time to kind of up the expectations on what it means to keep websites up when auto updates happen. And I don't know that that we are at, as a community, unfortunately, at like the level of production quality that guarantees user confidence that no sites will ever break when an update happens. So we're getting better every day, but the ecosystem isn't there yet, and it won't ever be there 100%. I get it. But I think it's scary to turn it on for majors right now, considering how much breakage happens even on minors. So
we've seen it should be. Some advances by Liquid Web. I think Managed WP might have something with this. Other different WordPress hosting companies, they now do this thing where they'll take a snapshot of your site before the update, they'll perform the update, give you a snapshot, take a snapshot of the site afterwards, and if it detects any errors or any changes or anything different, it will prevent the update from occurring and notify you that there is some sort of incompatibility or that the update is not compatible. I don't know if that's feasible for something like WordPress to do, because those are services. They obviously have the capabilities to do that, and I don't know if you can how you would accomplish that via core. But I mean, there's always that. It seems like there's always going to be this fear that if you turn on auto updates and you give WordPress the power to update itself, that there's always that fear of breakage, that you're going to get that one update, whether it's major, whether it's minor, whether it's a bug fix or whatever, that's going to break your site, that's going to cost you time, that's going to make you do things you weren't planning for. And maybe you would have had to do them anyways, even if after you checked your site manually. But no, how does WordPress get to that point where the user trust is there? I mean, even with minor releases in the past, we've seen that mistakes happen, and now we have minor releases for minor releases to, I don't know. I don't know, other than just trust that the majority of time auto updates will work.
Right. I mean, we trust right now that, you know, autopilot automobiles, right?
Well, we're getting there.
And you know, so that considering that that's the kind of world that everyone else is living in, having your WordPress site auto update itself ain't so bad, right? Like,
Why can I have my lawn auto update itself to be mowed so I don't have to do it? I would love an autonomous lawn.
They're all terrible. And like, they make mowers that go, but they're still not great.
I'm bringing it back to lawn again.
Well, no, you know, that's the world. That's the world you live in. You've been living outside trying to trim everything for 2 weeks now.
So yeah, so look.
Like, what do you your WordPress site? Is it just a regular install? It's not. It doesn't get deployed in fancy ways or anything. You just click the button and update it and do everything like normal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just go. You know what the heck? I'm more informed than most. You know, about what's in release, the change log, and kind of what to expect. I mean, the beauty of using one of these automatic backup and restore plugins is they usually just take snapshots of your site anyway. So I don't really care if the site breaks, because usually, boom, you know, I can quickly go back to a certain version. I mean, VersionPress, you know, that this is not a direct plug for, you know, VersionPress,
like it's an automatic
plugin. No, it's just the plugin we happen to use on the Tavern, where I don't worry about whether the site breaks or not, because we just revert it. Updraft Plus, I think, has the ability to back up and restore snapshots. There are other services out there to provide similar features, maybe even manage WP. I'd be surprised if they don't have something like that. Auto updates, I think just that auto updates are great. They're autonomous. They're one less thing that you have to worry about as a site admin. And it's something that can easily be done automatically for you. It's just getting over that trust bridge.
So, well, it's like, you remember back in the day, like Windows didn't come with any antivirus software. There was no, what do they call it now?
Windows Defender?
Yeah, Windows Defender. And Mac OS has like their own lower level, like, I forget what it's called, but it's a similar thing. They have a remote auto healing thing. And so all of the expectations on what a piece of software does are kind of the same. So I think most users would expect that if WordPress can identify that it has a problem, that it would fix itself. If it has a missing file, or if there's a file that has been tampered with or hacked, I think users expect that that WordPress takes care of itself now. Hosts that have jumped ahead to own that problem were smart, I think, because that's a true value add for customers or users to be able to roll sites back if there's a problem, or go back and restore from a backup if something happens. But I don't think it's unusual for a user to trust that WordPress is already doing these things, because almost every other piece of software around them does that or works that way. It's pretty rare that, you know, it has a problem and it just disappears or white screens and doesn't come back. I think that it wouldn't surprise me if WordPress goes that direction. But there will always be a part of me that wishes that WordPress didn't have to come with all that stuff, because not everyone needs it, and not everyone will take advantage of it. But that's okay. The majority will, and we'll keep making it better. So I agree with Andy.
So WordPress's 15th birthday is this weekend, Sunday to be exact, May 27th. And there are already a whole bunch of meetups taking place. Quite a few people, actually, I've seen photos on Twitter of a WordPress logo on cupcakes, cakes, cookies, a lot of cool meetups already happening. Well, as it turns out, the WordPress Foundation has made an addendum. It's kind of funny to me that this has to occur, but it's great that it occurred anyways. But so the WordPress trademark policy has been added to ease concerns of bakeries around the misuse of the WordPress logo, and it makes it easier for volunteers to get cake decorated with the WordPress logo. What they've done now is they've granted bakeries permission to frost a WordPress logo on the cakes and other delicious baked goods. So there you go. I mean, I guess the team was receiving a lot of letters for requests to use the trademark, which is the proper procedure, you know, to be in line with everything. And so they've made it so that you can do this without requesting permission now, and have that. Remember, it has to be the WordPress logo. Don't do the FOGO. Don't do the lowercase stuff. It would be terrible. So there you have it. Any special plans for you? You going to be celebrating WordPress's birthday this weekend?
I am, but not with any other WordPress folks, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So on Sunday of this year, since we're finally having nice weather, it seems like, there's a festival that's happening downtown where we live, where it's an annual brew fest.
That single stoplight?
Yes, by our one single stoplight. And so there's a brew fest, home brewers and local breweries are hanging outside to compare notes, and we're all going to hang out and on our village square.
Even in the village of East Troy, there's a brewer fest.
There is a
brewer fest. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's been fun. This will be the, I don't know, third or fourth year, I think.
Yeah.
It's nice. Our construction project is done. The lines got painted today, so the square looks all nice. I mean, it looks as nice as it can, considering it just had major surgery, but, you know, it's nice. So the cake thing, the cake thing is interesting, because I would have never considered that you would need someone's permission to just put the logo on the cake. But it's the right thing. This is clearly, I'm not a baker. I'm not a cake chef. I don't know what you call someone who only makes cakes.
Don't say that too fast.
So I'm curious to know, because I'm looking at the trademark page now, and I guess I could probably just ask Matt or Andrea, but thinking out loud, I wonder who has any, if anyone has exception on the trademark policy, because it used to just be automatic with WordPress.com using the WordPress wordmark. But if there are any exceptions to people who sell swag, for example, that has a WordPress mention or logo or something on it, who, if anyone, has written in and has an allowance or an exception? Because there's no list here that I could see.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody does, it would be interesting to see on the WordPress Foundation website. These are the organizations or the individuals that do have consent to use the logo or the word mark in these ways. the cake thing is funny. And so it's cute and fun to talk about. But if there are other organizations that have other exclusive rights, it would be interesting to see those too.
So speaking of the word, speaking of trademarks, I should say, we'll get into this a little bit, but Marcel Schmitz, I checked this out earlier this week. He released an unofficial WordCamp for iOS app. WordCamp being in the name of the AMP or app. WordCamp mm-hmm. is trademarked by the WordPress mm-hmm. Foundation. So I actually contacted him. I said, hey, did you request permission to use this? He goes, no, I didn't. I think I'll have to rename the app. I said, you know, well, that's probably what's going to happen there. Even though he mm-hmm. states that it's the unofficial app for WordCamps, you know, you probably can't have WordCamp in the name of the title because you know, it's a trademark term. So back to the app. His app actually utilizes the WordPress REST API endpoints from WordCamp Central and his website, Hello Dev, and he displays session speakers and news from an event's official site right on your iOS device. And he ended up using WordCamp Porto, which took place about maybe a weekend or two ago to test mm-hmm. features within the app. And checking it out, you know, I thought it was pretty nice. You know, mm-hmm. it's got different tabs on the bottom where you can see WordCamp speakers, sessions, when the session is. You can mark a session as a favorite. If you give your the app permission for the calendar app on your iPhone, it will add that session that you marked as a favorite or a reminder to your calendar, and it'll actually give you reminders on when that session's coming up. Mm-hmm. There's an ability to write notes below each session. So that's pretty convenient as well. The only really thing I noticed with regards to the app, I think this is one of the first versions, is that when I tried to mark a session as a favorite, it crashed the app. Every time it's reproducible. So maybe it was just I'm using an older version of iOS. I don't know. But overall, I liked what I saw in this app. And he says that he plans on continuing to develop the app and make it so that you could see upcoming WordCamps in the app without having to update the app all the time to see new events. And he was thinking about building in features to add more information about cities, venues, and you know even the ability to perhaps call in an Uber in future updates. Mm-hmm. Now, searching, there's been a lot of talk, even back as far as 2014, there's been some demand on having an official app for iOS or even other devices, a WordCamp app, so that you could see and access everything for these events within an app. If you search the App Store, Apple's App Store for WordCamp, it only produces two results, which is his app and the WordCamp EU Paris Guide. And I found out that there is an official WordCamp app for Android available on Google Play and GitHub, but the project hasn't seen any updates within about 2 or 3 years. So who knows what's going on with that project. This app fills a void, and I hope that maybe if it doesn't become the official app, I hope that maybe it inspires a couple of people to maybe take on that role of mm-hmm. creating that app, because now we have the REST API endpoints. It's just a matter of, I guess, putting it all together, and I make it sound easier than it is, but of course you need time, you need resources, and people committed mm-hmm. to that project. It's just another project.
Mm-hmm. The app looks great and works great and feels native and all those things. It's a good example of like how the very hard and fast line between showing up to open source and contributing and building something, like identifying a need, building the thing, and shipping quickly, and then iterating, right? Like that's all these things that we talk about as a culture that we think that we think are important or that we believe or whatever else. And then there's trademark infringement. Like at what point have you officially gone too far? And obviously trademark infringement is bad, but at the same time, if someone shows up and builds it and does it, if he would have called it anything, there are lots of unofficial Twitter and Reddit ads. There's lots of apps for all sorts of other things. What exactly does a person like Marcel do? What should they have done? Should they have done the work first and then pinged or emailed the Trademark Foundation for a consult for some time for something else, or just go and do it and rename it. Like, I think actually, I think renaming it is probably the what everyone else in the world would do. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but that seems like what happens all the time. Well, nope, we've got to rename ourselves. We did the wrong thing. Well, it'll be fine. Like,
I spoke to Marcel, and he said it was more just he didn't know. You know, it was just it's just one thing he didn't even realize or check into. Mm-hmm. I think, of course, when you create something like this and you find out that you're probably violating the trademark, it's probably a real downer, and now you have to decide, right. Oh, do I want to rename this, or do I want to just, you know, throw my work away or have my work go to waste? And so if he doesn't get permission to use WordCamp in the name of his app, even though he states that it's unofficial and what have you, I mean, it's pretty obvious it's unofficial. Mm-hmm. It's obvious to me, but if he renames it, what does he rename it to that's still kind of off the bat, you know, it deals with WordCamps and WordPress events and things of that nature?
So I don't like the official Reddit app before it's moved around a bunch, but it used to be called Alien Blue. Didn't matter. You knew what the Reddit Alien was, but the name of the app just became its own thing. And there's another one for iOS called Apollo, I think, that is pretty good too. So now it just takes on a life of its own because it is as good as it is. So I mean, another clever name would be fine, but I don't think it needs to be the unofficial WordCamp or anything else. It could be called literally any other thing. And if it does it well enough, then people will use it anyways. So,
but if I was looking for an official app, I would expect the official app to be called WordCamp for iOS.
It's true. And it being the official app, it has this weird intrinsic value. Like, I don't always love the mail.app that comes with macOS, but I don't like anything else any better. I don't really love notes and calendars and everything, but it is the one that works the best. Nothing else seems to work as quickly or reliably or anything else as the native stock regular apps do. And so someone else's take usually is less stable or incomplete or something else. And so it's rare that there are a few rare apps like that have always been pretty bulletproof, like in writing code or using computers or whatever for as long as I have been. But I think it's, you find that one that works, that's stable. And if this is it, then as a community, we decide if it is the native app or not. Is this the one we adopt? Or is this the one that we don't adopt? They should be more transparent or simpler. These only come up every couple of years though. So it's not like there's a huge urgency to create a policy or a procedure around adoption of third party unofficial, whatever. But it's a good example of why it would be valuable to have something.
So you mentioned an app named Apollo, and it just so happens that BuddyPress 3.0.0 was released last week, codenamed Apollo. Yep. And it's available for download, and it has all the things we've been talking about before. All right, help me with this. Nouveau. Nouveau. Oh, yeah, that's Nouveau. A new template system inside of BuddyPress. So give us kind of a rundown of some of the great things that are in BuddyPress 3.0 that now everybody has access to.
So Paul Gibbs largely led the 3.0.0 release. Nouveau is... So BuddyPress has had, since probably 2011 or 12, template packs that it comes with. And it's only ever came with one because it's a lot of work to build an entire BuddyPress set of templates. And so Nouveau represents a lot of effort from Hugo, iMath, Boone, Paul, Mercy Me, a bunch of other contributors on GitHub to reinvent the default template pack experience when you install BuddyPress for the first time. The template pack that we've had for just about kind of ever now has been based on the old BP default theme, and we've just kind of iterated on it and chipped away at it over time. And so Nouveau is, you know, not exactly the React-based modern front-end React application like I think maybe everyone would want or like or expect, but it is using more baked-in JavaScript from WordPress, like Backbone and other stuff, to rely a little bit more heavily on the things that WordPress comes with instead of reinventing a bunch of wheels. So Nouveau is a big deal, and having two template packs starts to expose some more settings and possibilities for having multiples or overlapping ones. We can kind of do neat stuff. And then it has like first class official support for WP CLI. And so Renato Alves had independently kind of worked on WP CLI support for both BuddyPress and BBPress. And Ryan Fugate had worked on it for a while, AKA Modem Looper. He and Renato kind of picked it up and kept going with it. So it comes with WP CLI support right out of the box. There's no adding a thing or a third party thing in anymore. And then a bunch of performance improvements. I mean, over time, we've continued to add caching improvements and object caching and query caching to just about everything, so that everything from friendship relationships to activity streams and all these things all are super speedy and fast. So overall, 3.0 has been pretty great.
And officially, bye-bye to legacy forums component.
That, oh, so good. Like the old BB, like, so a long time ago, Andy Peatling had made what I thought was a clever decision to just include all of BBPress into BuddyPress. And that included BackPress, and that included the GetText API, included all these like nested
things. That's a lot of BBs.
It's a lot of BBs, a lot of BBs and BPs and everything. And so since BBPress became a plugin instead of a standalone thing, I've been on a mission to get that old forum code out of there. And so everyone kind of agreed 3.0 was the time to do it. And so we had a few notices or disclaimers in 2.9 that this was happening. And so far, no one seems to have had any issues. So far, so good.
So let's get on to some important. This is the really important part of BuddyPress 3.0. Where is Apollos? What is Apollos? Well, in northeast London, Stoke Newington, or Stokey as it's affectionately known, is an area awash with newly opening restaurants amidst lapping waves of encroaching gentrification. Look at that. New York Times type words here. Apollos is an authentically Neapolitan pizza place on the high street serving fantastically tasty yet uncomplicated pizzas. If you ever find yourself in North London, don't miss Apollos. And that's one of the cool themes about BuddyPress major releases, is it's always tied into a really cool Italian joint.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Lots of cool stories, because it always is someplace local or someplace we've gone to together, or it's fun. And Apollo is the name for automatics.org team. That's the code name for.
Okay, there we go.
There's lots of Apollo in this in this episode. So 3.0 was like getting rid of the old forums, adding Nouveau, adding WP CLI. This is like another one of those like kind of cool pinnacle BuddyPress releases where has a new look and feel. It's got rid of the old forums, which is great. And it has some developer goodies in the form of WP CLI support. So there's some other little stuff too, X profile fields, telephone numbers, I think. There's a couple of it, but little things. And we're working on our own a boon largely, but others are jumping in too to quickly follow WordPress core's direction to try and get GDPR support baked in and what that looks like. I know Chris Klosowski that
well,
I
well, you got about 2 days
as working very diligently for getting it into EDD also. So there's a lot of GDPR work and stuff going into everything right now. So I can empathize with any listener right now who's been working in nothing but GDPR related things. I'm right there with you.
So the folks over at ThemeShaper, they have written about and released open source project called Music, which is a Guten-powered theme.
Guten-powered?
Guten-powered theme, wow. Which makes it like super cool or something. But so originally, a few months back, I guess Kajil Regstad? I'm terrible with these names, but he did a sketch document to assist people with creating Gutenberg block-driven themes, and you'll find that post on ThemeShaper. But now they've taken that experience, and they're creating a sort of like an example site for a band named Super Serious, which I think is kind of a cool band name, where it says they turn it into a working example of a Gutenberg-powered WordPress theme. And Music, of course. So if you take a look at it, you see these edited cover images, tour dates, hero images, and it kind of gives you at a glance sort of the true power and flexibility design-wise of what you can do with Gutenberg for, in this case, a band's website. And if you take a look at it, they've got a theme that we'll link to on the front page or in the show notes that you could take a look at it. But if you added all these different colors and ways you can edit the hero blocks and stuff like that to kind of make it your own, some of the things they've learned are going to transfer back into the underscores parent theme. And there you have it. I haven't taken a look at it on my own yet. I will either today or tomorrow and do a write-up about it. But it's nice to see some of these Guten-powered themes being created. And I was just sort of thinking today that, so let's say you have a Gutenberg-powered theme, and you have all these styles and supports for blocks, but there's still this, so a theme can style and have custom styles for plugin outputs for, let's say, Gravity Forms or Contact Form 7, and you could support different outputs that these plugins provide. And it's kind of like blocks, but a theme cannot support and have designs for all the different kinds of blocks that are out there. It just doesn't make sense.
Yep. There's just so many. And it's the same problem kind of all over again is how does a theme support all the plugins and how does a plugin support all the themes? It's just a third
thing. How does a theme support all the blocks?
Yeah. How do plugins support blocks? It's a third thing. It's not any better. It is only different. That's okay. It does just make it harder for theme authors to pick a side. Which blocks do you support, or where does it stop? When do you just say I can't add support for all these things? I know that like the folks at Array Themes add support for WooCommerce or EDD or other plugins. And plugins come with support for themes, right? Like it goes both directions. And
well, so, I mean, what have we seen already? And I think it's the beginning of what we're going to see in the future is that you're going to have a starter theme or a theme that's built around or for Gutenberg. And it's either going to come with or highly suggested for a plugin that you can bundle with it that comes with a plugin with its own sort of blocks, and the theme's going to have built-in designs, block styles for those blocks, and that's what you're going to see. And instead of a theme having a million options or bundling a million different plugins, instead for blocks, you could just have one plugin, have all your blocks in there that you want, and then style them like you want with your own theme. And you're kind of creating your own little mini ecosystem with your blocks and your theme and your styles.
Well, and the thing about blocks, it doesn't matter if it's Lego or
I just hope we don't end up in a situation that we're already in with you switch one theme out for another and now you just lost all your styles for those particular blocks.
You will.
And now we're in a it's the same situation all over again.
It is exactly the same situation all over again. It's not any different. It is exactly the same. So what do you do?
Right?
The thing about blocks is that you take them apart, you put them back together. You build something, you take it apart. And so sometimes there's value in bundling specific blocks together to make a certain thing. And sometimes there's value in buying a million of the same block so that you can help others out with whatever it is. And so we are going to see the same exact ebb and flow of people making themes that come with a bunch of blocks, people making plugins that come with a bunch of blocks, people making block plugins so the plugin can just be active and it'll handle the styles and everything by itself. We will see every single one of those things happen. The thing that still bugs me about all of it is that when Gutenberg ships with WordPress core proper, it's in, it's there, it doesn't matter, love it or hate it, when that happens, that's what's happening, that the WordPress will be using this compiled, bundled, web-packed version of all of the JavaScript that it comes with, React and the whatever, however many React little plugins and things that it needs to be Gutenberg. And so when I build a block, I also have to have React, and I also have to have all the things that React needs, and I have to compile and bundle my own plugin to do its own thing. It's not like you just enqueue jQuery and you get jQuery. Like, Gutenberg has its own, my block has its own. Everything is kind of on its own. And so I'm it'll be weird to see what the results of, let's say, I've got 10 blocks that are all separate plugins that all need to interface with Gutenberg and have their own React-based whatever they've got. It's not like they're all bundling their own version of React now instead of using the version that comes with core, because it's not just as simple as enqueuing it anymore. Are we going to end up with these enormously huge, not enormously huge, but we're going to end up with copies of the foundation for all these individual blocks loaded? So the results might be a little surprising until we...
It's probably just the tunnel we got to go through to get to the end.
It is. That's exactly
it. To figure it out.
Yep. I think that's exactly what it is. But yeah, you're exactly right. That is where we are right now. That's where we'll be for a while.
The same problems, just a different way of going about, just a different editor. The same problems. Right. So speaking of the GDPR, take a drink. Yeah, oh man, I'm toasted by the end of the show with GDPR. And this could have been my
you're
pick.
Not, it
could
have been your pick. Not drinking. No, I haven't I'm seen not, you drink.
I'm not drinking.
Just for the listeners that don't have video.
That's right. Delicious Brains have been pumping out some really awesome content lately, and they've actually released a free anonymization add-on for local development. So the GDPR requires... what do they call it? Pseudonymization?
Pseudo-anonymization?
Pseudo-anonymization, meaning de-identifying personally identifiable information. So this is tied towards if you do local development and you transfer user data, customer data from a live site to local, you can now use this add-on, which ties into WP Migrate DB Pro, and anonymize the data, and it uses the Faker library to anonymize user data with completely fake data but of the same type. So for example, all emails are replaced with fake emails, phone numbers with fake numbers, etc. So this means that the exported data is completely anonymous but looks like real data to make it easier to use when developing locally to avoid this kind of thing if it were simply encrypted. So really nice tool to make the data GDPR compliant if you're working with data from your live site locally. As someone mentioned in the comments, do not work with this locally and then pushed it live, because that would be bad. But this is a pretty neat tool by Delicious Brains, and they've made it available for free that works with WP Migrate DB Pro.
So
Faker Library.
Yeah, I like it. So then, like, this is more along the lines of, I think, the types of tools that I think will eventually end up in WordPress core when everyone has a more clear idea of what the tools and functions are that all of WordPress needs. There needs to be a function to invent a pseudonym for an email address or for an admin username to make it anonymous. And until WordPress has those functions, everyone has to reinvent their own. Someone has to decide, well, if a user account doesn't have an email address, how do we randomize email addresses in our own pattern? But WordPress should have built-in tools to do that. So we're going to see a bunch of folks come up with their own approaches. And then in 2 years, we will have the one that everyone agrees on being the best. But until then, we're going to probably see a bunch of different emerging approaches on how to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. So last bit of news, we'll get into some of the features related to it next week. I know Jetpack recently had a point release which introduces, you guessed it, more privacy features related to the GDPR. You should check that out. And WooCommerce 3.4 was released today, which includes customer data export and deletion tools to be compliant with the GDPR. We'll get into those. We'll get into that release next Wednesday, and we'll see if Cody Landefeld will get him on the show to talk about what's new in WooCommerce. Other than that, that's going to do it for today's show. Unless there's anything that you wanted to cover, did you find your goats yet?
No goats. I do have two things. One, when we were talking about BuddyPress stuff, I forgot to say thanks and give kudos and shout out to all of the contributors and leads and everyone that made BuddyPress 3.0's release possible. And I really wanted to do that. I wish I would have done that before, but here I am doing it at the end anyways. But, you know, contributing to open source is hard. It takes a lot of work and volunteer effort and all those things. And so it's important to make sure that everyone knows how awesome that they're doing and that it's appreciated and useful and all that. And then I wanted my pick of the week to be a plug for a friend of mine who released, at least, you know, somewhat released or launched their Kickstarter for a card game. So I don't know. I'm not trying to, you know, sell somebody else's stuff, pimp it on the show, but you know.
Oh, you've never done that before.
No, never. But it's a super fun game. And because it's like a close local friend, we've played it a few different times with some at employee meetups or at just regular tech meetups or with friends at home, or we've had print and plays. We've played it, so it's called Panic Mode, and so it is relevant to this show and our listeners, where it is a cooperative card game that is is all about disaster recovery. And so there, you know, of the 200 cards that there are, they're all really funny, and there are role cards. So you're the CEO, and I'm a developer, and someone else is a project manager, and someone else is in marketing, someone else is in customer service, and on and on and on. And then you've got 25 minutes where all of the systems that you have are down, customers are upset, servers are down, and morale is down because everything is terrible. And then you have 25 minutes to try and get everything back up and like get out of panic mode, ship your thing or fix the problem. And so it's really exciting. It's like a ton of fun to like play back and forth and score points and watch how it all plays out. And every game is different, and it's always been super fun. So it's like one of those side secret projects that our my friend Jen, or Carrie and I's friend Jennifer, has been kind of working on mostly alone for the past year, or maybe almost two. And so to watch it go live on Kickstarter and be a game and come to life is really cool. So that was
that. That explains A, why you're sitting and where you're sitting the way you are, and why it says panic mode on that screen back there. I see the reflection. And I was panic mode. What does that mean? Now it all makes sense.
Oh, that's so weird.
It was subliminal, but it's all coming together for me right now.
That's so weird that you could see that, Jeff. I had no idea that that was.
No idea. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
So I don't know if it's up if we include it. I mean, search out in the web or Kickstarter for panic mode with an exclamation point at the end. And if you're feeling generous or you like games,
it's your pick of the week. It gets in the show notes.
And there it is. That's my pick of the week. Super fun.
All right. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptamarin.com.
Hey.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffFR0. And John?
JJJ.blog or GitHub or in Twitter at JJJ.
Awesome. So I'm going to enjoy myself this weekend. I'm going to a rib cook-off, and I'm going to eat all the meat.
You should. And I'm going to go to a brew festival, and I'm going to drink all of the wheat.
All of the wheat and the brew and the hops. Sounds like a good weekend. All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Have a safe and enjoyable Memorial Day weekend if you happen to celebrate it. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye, everybody.